let's do. Okay, so tonight we're going to talk about Gilgulim and the afterlife. We can discuss afterwards where we want to go from this. I have two ideas in mind. One is, because there are at least two people who asked for afterlife themed things, so we can continue down this route. I actually have stuff prepared already anyways from like four Shavuos ago. My only reticence there is that we may be doing it in College of Lifelong Learning, but I'm not sure how much overlap there is in between the people who come here and go to there, but all right, Seder. And the other idea was to talk about Midrash and Parshanut, which I think is a very, very interesting topic that bothers people a lot, or people think about it a lot, about why the rabbis darshan things the way they do, how Parshanut works, how Perushim work, the history of Perushim. That's always been an interesting topic, and I have stuff prepared on it as well. If we pick something else, then I'm going to have to start from scratch. So that's why I prefer those two things. All right. So tonight we'll start with this one-off shiur, which is about Gilgulim in the afterlife. I mostly use this one essay by Rav Yitzchak Blau. As always, it's supposed to be a discussion, not just me talking.
Is he still alive?
Yes, he is. He teaches in now. He teaches in Leva Torah, I believe. I know. I think he used to be in the Gush. I'm not sure where he teaches right now. He's been here, actually. He was here as a scholar in residence once. and he wrote a very, very nice article for the YU Torah Mata Journal a bunch of years ago about Gilgulim. So I use his mostly. But the truth is, when I first made this shiur, I made it a long time ago, it was part of like a longer extended series about the difference between the Rambam and Ramban on a whole host of issues. It's a very interesting thing to just go through different philosophical issues and just look at the two of them as kind of archetypes. The Rambam is the more rationalist and the Ramban is the more mystical, although sometimes it's hard to tell the difference. And but on this issue, they definitely diverge, or they seem to definitely diverge. So we'll start with the Rambam. The Rambam, what is the Rambam's view about Gilgulim, reincarnation? So the Rambam says...
Before you start,
yes.
Gilgulim, an accurate translation of reincarnation?
Well, the Galgel is to roll over, so it means to go over, to do it over and over again.
What is
it? When we say Gilgulim, it means that you're coming back in a next life. Your soul is going to be reincarnated into a new body.
Okay.
That is the view. Why that would happen and how that would happen, I want to save to the end. But first, I want to discuss whether or not we actually believe that it does happen. Okay. So.
I actually got an interesting story about it.
Okay. So Hatova Atzvuna LeTzadikim. This is what the Rambam writes in his Hilchos Tshuva. Hatova Atzvuna LeTzadikim. The great good that is kind of going to be given to tzaddikim at some point. Hayi chaye olam haba. That's olam haba. V'hi achayim she'ein mavet imayin v'atova she'ein ima ra'a. And that is life which has no death connected to it, and goodness which has no badness associated with it. Hu shekatuv b'torah l'mayin yitav lecha v'harachta yamim. That's what the Torah means when it says l'mayin yitav lecha v'harachta yamim. L'mayin yitav lecha v'harachta yamim. Where is that from, by the way? L'mayin yitav lecha v'harachta yamim. Which mitzvah is that associated with? It's either Kibbutz Avayim or Shulach HaKen. It escapes me right now. They're both the same. That's the point. That was Elisha ben Avuya's mistake, not realizing that when the Torah promises long life, it doesn't mean long life in this world, but rather it means long life, whatever long means, in the next world. That's what the Gemara in at least two different places says. And that's what the Rambam alludes to over here. Mipia Shmua, he says, according to our tradition, those psukim should be read. In other words, the Torah just says, "Al pi pshat," it says you're going to have a long life. But the Rambam says, according to our tradition, it really means that you're going to enjoy olam haba. V'zehu olam haba. Shechar tzadikim hu sheyizku l'noam zeh v'yu b'tov azu. U'piron harishayim hu shelo yizku l'chayim elu ele yichatuv yamutu. Here the Rambam says something very harif. I don't remember if we talked about this in this shir before. The Rambam says that tzaddikim are going to be zochet olam haba, and non-tzaddikim, rishayim, are going to be just cut off and die. What does that mean? I think did we talk about this once? According to the Rambam, it sounds like he's saying that rishayim, basically, what happens when they die? Nothing. Oblivion. They go nowhere. They just get cut off and they're done. They're finished. Game over for them. There's nothing. What? Say again? Nothing. It's gone. Forever. Nothing. This caused, we're going to see, this caused a lot of problems to the Rambam. Because philosophically speaking, how does that make you feel? So it's falal nukvar. I have aser. No, I have aser. Yes, achad esre be. Ken. Sicha. What? How does that strike you? He says basically that tzaddikim get olam haba, and rishayim, they're done.
Rishayim or everybody else?
Rishayim, let's say.
Means there's no punishment for rishayim.
Oh, so the Ramban in his Shara Gemul, I think, I don't think we're going to see it here. In his Shara Gemul, he says, what does that mean? That means that they never get their comeuppance. They could live a life filled with immorality, and if they happen to get lucky, they enjoy it. And then what happens? They don't get, nothing ever happens to them. I'll take that. You know, in other words, I'd rather be a tzaddik and enjoy Olam Haba, but as a Rasha, I might just decide, Seder, that's the deal, I'll take it. There's no punishment in the afterworld. How could it be? But the Rambam seems to say that here. Well, they believe that about tzaddikim as well.
Yeah, I'm saying, but it's the same viewpoint.
But once you believe that there is,
it doesn't really make much difference.
Right, but once you believe that there is supposed to be another world where you get what you deserve, then we also want the Rishayim to get what they deserve. Otherwise, what's the point? But the Rambam doesn't seem to think so. He seems to say that Rishayim, they're gone. Yichetu v'yamutu. V'chol mi she'enu zocha l'chayim elu, hu ha'meid she'enu chay l'olam, ele nichrad berisho v'avad kebehema. Like an animal. Like an animal, he's gone. Do we believe that animals have to spend their time in Gehenna after they die? That we're not offended by. That's fine. I'm okay with that. They get blinked out of existence. Seder, but for Rishayim as well. V'zeh karet haktuva b'Torah shenemar yikaret tikaret hanefesh ahi. V'pi hashmu olam du yikaret b'olam hazeh tikaret l'olam haba. Kolmar shota hanefesh shepirsha min haguf b'olam hazeh ina zocha l'chei olam haba ela gam min haolam haba nichretet. He doesn't get Olam Haba. Others might have said, no, karet means he doesn't get the good Olam Haba. He gets the bad one. That's what you might say. But the Rambam doesn't seem to say that. He says you're out of the game completely. Now, what is the nature of Olam Haba? Olam Haba ein bo guf ukviya ala nefashot ha-tzadikim bilvad, below guf kemalachei ha-sharet. Then the Olam Haba, according to the Rambam, is a completely non-physical place. We're going to be just like the malachim, which is, by the way, David, is very, very interesting, apropos our discussion a long time ago. What are malachim? So I don't know either, but and it could be that they're abstract entities, but it could also be that they're also neshamot that didn't ever get bodies. Who knows? That there are other creatures that exist in another world that we don't understand, that are just like we believe we have souls that are completely spiritual. Maybe there are other spiritual beings that don't get bodies. They never do. They just are always souls, and we'll be like that.
One of the things we said with angels. We said that an angel might be certain task or not task, but like a thing that's going on in the spiritual realm.
Right.
And maybe that's basically what.
Yeah. Well, a malach literally means a messenger.
Right. It means a messenger. So, yes. So, but I don't know. It influences, and we spoke about how.
Right.
Open and close
right, the Ramchal. We said the Ramchal kind of the angels are those that are the lords over nature. They cause things to happen.
And we said that it takes man to connect to the spiritual in order for it to have effect on, right. on them. So maybe the spiritual thing is all about man connecting to some sort of metaphysical thing and
maybe
whatever, and then the afterworld for tzaddikim is that they also have an influence on.
Oh, that's interesting.
On that.
That's
so
very
interesting. That's why I was.
They become malachim like that. They become kind of like malachim.
There's no such thing as a malach.
It's very interesting.
It's like a.
But you're saying they become part of almost the divine machine.
It's like an influence they can have to anybody who passes. People in the world as well, but they all.
That's a very interesting idea. So I would say that for the Rambam, it sounds like when he says. He is making some kind of equation between the neshama without a body and malachei asharet. Whether it's like what David's talking about or whether it's like what I'm suggesting, I don't know. We'll never know.
Never know. It almost makes sense. Like somebody who writes a book is forever eternally inscribed in the afterworld. Because
but he seems to be talking. Idea. more tachlis than that. I don't think he's speaking poetically. I think he's speaking like real, but spiritually. Meaning, there's some not he says explicitly not in the physical world, but in another world something really is happening. Ho ve'in bo gviot ve'in bo lo achilav lo shtiav lo davar mikol advarim shegufot bnei adam tzrichim le'en bo lamazeh. There is no food, there's no drink, there's nothing that people need for their bodies in this world. Ve'lo yara davarim bo lamazeh advarim shema'arin le'gufot bo lamazeh. Nothing will happen to your body like nothing will happen to you like it happens to your body. You won't sit, you won't stand, you won't sleep, you won't die, you won't be sad, you won't be happy, you won't have fun, you won't have you won't be bored. And then he says, this is what the Rishon, this is what the Chachamim say. Here's a problem source for the Rambam, but he quotes it nonetheless. He says, Ha'olam haba ein bo lo achil v'lo shtil v'lo tashmish ela tzadikim yoshvim v'itrotein b'roshein v'ne'anim b'ziv ha'shchina. The first half of this ma'amar works for the Rambam, the second not so much. The Gemara says that in the next world there's no eating, there's no drinking, and there's no sleeping. What is there? There's just the tzaddikim sitting with their crowns on their heads, enjoying the rays of the Shechina. So what happened there? So, but that's what the Rambam says. But how does he explain it? Nitbarer lecha she'en sham guf lefi she'en bam lochil eshtia v'zeh shamu tzaddikim yoshvim. What does that mean? B'derech chida amru. It's a metaphor. Klomar tzaddikim mitzuyin sham b'lo amal b'lo yegia. They don't feel any effort when they are there because they have no bodies. Their crowns are their knowledge. They will ultimately just be beings with knowledge. Knowledge is a non-physical thing that souls will have access to. And that's what the Rambam says. And that's what the Atara is. The Ravid takes them to task, because the Ravid says, I put it in the small, Divrei Ha'ish Hazeh. Wow. Divrei Ha'ish Hazeh. This man's words, Be'inai Krovim L'mi Shomer Shein Tchiat Mitim L'Gufot Ele Neshamot Bilvad. Sounds like he's saying that there's no tchiyat hametim for bodies, only for neshamot. Basically, he says, the Rambam seems to be denying the principle of at least one reincarnation, right? At least one reincarnation everybody is kind of like okay with, right? That we all believe, that we all kind of came in believing that there's going to be at least one. There's going to be a tchiyat hametim at the end of days. That's not what I meant when I said we're going to be talking about Gilgulim. I meant a kind of constant reincarnation all the time. But he says, the Rambam seems to be denying even the Tchiyat HaMetim at the end of days. Because he says that when a person dies, he goes to Olam Haba, and that's it. And from now on, he's just in the Shema.
Surely we can't believe.
I can't wait to hear what you're going to say now. Surely what?
We can't believe that bodies are going to come back to life in the end of days.
That's exactly what we believe. It's exactly what we believe. The Gemara and the Mishnah and Chelek says anybody who doesn't believe that will not have a Chelek Olam Haba.
I'm out of it. But nobody can believe that.
Why? Because it's miraculous?
The bodies are gone, man. The bodies are gone.
They're not gone. They're in the ground.
The bodies are they're disappeared.
How many kids do you have, David?
A body from
how many kids do you have?
Do you know about?
Where did they come from, David? Oh, that's different. Right. Where did they come from? How did that happen?
Okay. We're talking about reinstating the bodies that we had. No?
Yeah, well, that's okay, a question that we're going to return to at the end.
We're talking about reinstating the body.
Mechanics we'll get to at the end.
Okay, fine.
Mechanics we'll get to at the end.
Okay.
We'll get to at the end mechanics. But the fact that there's going to be a Tchiyat HaMetim at the end of days is
what would even in the Shaman? Does it make sense?
No, that's what the Ravid says. The Rambam seems to be saying. The Rambam, you seem to be saying that at the end of the day, once you die, that's the end. That's it for the body, for your soul. No, you're not gonna. Your soul is no longer gonna enter any body. The Ravid is very, very bothered by this. All of the Rishonim are bothered by this because this directly contradicts the Mishnah at the end of Sanhedrin.
I had a shiur about 20 years ago in the JLE. Those from England know what journey is. I think it's only David. Basically, it was Shu was saying, I was talking about the whole union of Gugulim and Kasamasim and Kulim. And the Rav then spoke about there was, I'm probably going to get it slightly off, but this is the whole Shu in 2 minutes. He said there's 10 Neshamot. Gedolot,
yeah,
Rashiot, and from those, all the rest of the neshamot come out of, and we're here in this world to fix and to
so this is
to,
more mechanics. This is mechanics.
To fix the neshamata at the 10 rashiyot and neshamot. And however long it takes, 6,000 years, it takes 6,000 years. But we're all here to fix it. And when the neshama dies, a person dies when that person has reached, when the neshama has reached that goal.
So this is all mechanics, and that's obviously going to be going with a very, very pro Gilgulim shita, right? And that's more mechanics. I want to get back to that later. First, let's just deal with the Rambam. So the Rambam sounds like he's saying there's not even going to be a single reincarnation at the end of days, which the Navi predicts, right? The dry bones of Yechezkel. That's, you know, this is very, very basic, and the Rambam sounds like he's denying it because he's saying that when a person dies, that's it.
Yeah, because he talks about the fact that Mashiach, there's going to be nothing miraculous there.
He does say that about Yomot HaMashiach, which might be different than... Okay. We'll see that later. So... V'chaye Roshi lo ayadat Chazal azeh. He says, in no way that Chazal thought this. Shari Amr Ksubas, Atitin Tzadikim Sheyamdu Bilvu Shehen. Tzadikim will get up and they will be in their clothes. Kavachomer Michita, just like Chita. They said something similar to what I just said to David, which is that, what, you think that just because something died, it can't come out of the ground anymore? Do you know how seeds sprout? Seeds go into the ground. And the first thing that they do before they grow is they break apart. They basically disintegrate into the ground, like a body. And then what happens to them?
Gross.
It grows. Sprout. Something new. So too, the Gemara says, so too, the human body will be the same way. Goes into the ground, disintegrates, and then God will, miraculously, obviously, will grow them again. That's what the Gemara says. V'chein ayu metzuin lebneim, al tikberuni bekelim levanim. People said, don't bury me in white clothing, which is, I believe it's underwear, actually. Don't bury me in these clothing or those clothing, because I forget exactly the context of the Gemara, but they were bothered by what they would look like when they got up if they were wearing such and such clothing. So they assumed that they were going to get up with those clothing. If they're missing an arm, then when they come back, they won't be missing the arm anymore. People will come back in whole bodies. You don't have to worry about that. The Rambam takes all these Gemaras very literally and says it's for sure that Chazal believed that people were going to physically come back in their bodies. He says, I think the Gemara is speaking literally. People are going to be very, very strong, so you're right, they're not going to be any effort, but they're going to be in perfect bodies, like Adam HaRishon, perfect bodies, and that's the way it's going to be. Okay?
So does the Rambam have an answer to the Rabbids?
Yes, he does. So that's why... Two things. We'll stop there in the Rambam. The Rambam, basically because of this, actually wrote a treatise called Igeret Tchiyat HaMetim, because people were criticizing him based on these passages. And he defended himself and said, no, I believe in Tchiyat HaMetim. I totally believe in Tchiyat HaMetim in the future. And this creates, you know, if we have time for this another time, not now, a very, very divergence of opinion about what will happen in the future. So I'll just say, on one foot, according to the Rambam, there's going to be one Tchiyat HaMetim, and then people are going to die again. Everybody's going to die, and then happens what he's talking about, real Olam Haba, people return to an Olam and a Shamot, and that goes on forever. In other words, there's going to be one cycle of Tchiyat HaMetim. Why is a different question, and then people will go on forever in Olam and a Shamot. Most of the other Rishonim disagree, surprisingly, and they say that there will be one cycle of reincarnation, but at that point, we will no longer die. And we will live in bodies for eternity, which was what the plan was with Adam HaRishon. Do you think Adam HaRishon was supposed to die? He wasn't supposed to die. That was the whole point. God told him, if you eat from the tree, you'll die. What if he doesn't eat from the tree? He lives forever. The original plan was that man would live forever and he wouldn't disintegrate, his body wouldn't come apart. And that's what the Ramban believes, and most of the school, most of the Rishonim seem to see.
Physical life.
Physical life
with the soul in the body the way it was supposed to be.
And therefore having children.
I don't know. I don't know.
It's sort of right. Forever doesn't really...
I think they would have children because Adam and Chava conceived before the sin.
Sure, I'm just saying as much as then miracles will be needed in the whole...
So, well, or just the nature, right, yes, I hear what you're saying. Yes,
yeah,
I hear what you're saying. I hear what you're saying. We'll have some civil engineering.
Housing,
for that.
Yes.
We'll figure out the civil engineering for that, yes. I'm sure it will work out. But that's their view. So in other words, you have two options. You either have the option of people coming back into their bodies and then dying, that's the Rambam's opinion, or the Rambam's opinion, which is that people will come, and many of those, that people will come back and they'll live that way forever.
What's the first source of the Tikatabatim?
Well, the Navi talks about bodies coming back. There's a lot of things to talk about here. There's Olam Haba. There's the place where we go when we die. There's Mashiach in general. There's Tchiyat HaMetim. There's a lot of these different things that come from different places. And some of them are only derived, and they're not explicit. Many
Olam
of them.
Haba is
Olam Haba, you can't find anything explicit for it, but the Gemara in Sanhedrin goes through several derivations that Chazal had for understanding it. But it seems to be just a basic understanding.
To that, how can it be so fundamental if it's not written in the...
It's a great question. That I want to save. Let's not talk about that tonight. No, it's a great question. There are to that particular question, how can it? Why is it not mentioned if it is so fundamental? I have a share with at least 12 answers to that question, and then just the discussion that comes out of that. So we'll definitely talk about that, but I don't want to talk about it now. So let's continue with the Gilgulim. So we've seen the Rambam's view. What does the Rambam think? Are there Gilgulim? Are there rolling Gilgulim?
Unlikely.
He doesn't mention them at all. So it's safe to say that if he doesn't mention it, doesn't exist for the Rambam. I think that's pretty safe, right? He would have mentioned that. No reason for him to hide that. He doesn't mention it here. I can tell you he doesn't mention the Morne Vuchim. He doesn't mention any of his other works. No mention anywhere in the Rambam of a concept of Gilgulim. It doesn't say yes or no. Okay? There are others who explicitly said no. The Rav Sadia Gaon in his Emunah Sadeos explicitly says it doesn't exist. He says it's not an idea from Judaism. Who disagrees? Most Kabbalists disagree, and Veroshehem, the Ramban. And the Ramban not only disagreed, he felt that it was totally fundamental to Jewish philosophy. So take a look at this next source. Torat Adam Shara Gemul. We've seen Shara Gemul before, I always make the same comment. The Ramban wrote a book called Torat Adam, which is 80% a halachic work, all about basically end of life. It starts with when a person gets sick, the halachot of when a person gets sick. I think it actually starts when a person is born, if I remember correctly. But then it goes on to when a person gets sick, then when a person gets really sick, then when a person's on his deathbed, then when a person dies, then it goes into Hilchos Avelos, and really cheerful stuff, right? Torat Ha'adam, right? The life of man, basically. And then the last section of it, which, I mean, I don't know what percentage of it was, I mean, probably like 10 to 20% of the book, is called Shar HaGmul, which is all about afterlife, okay? Talks about where Gan Eden is in the world. I'm not kidding. He talks about ideas of Sechar V'Onesh. He talks about Gilgulim, although he doesn't explicitly say it. That's what we're going to see now. And he talks about his arguments with the Rambam about what Olam Haba is going to look like. Okay? So here, we're going to see his references to what seems to be the idea of Gilgulim. So he says, the context over here is the Ramban is trying to explain why people suffer. That's what's going on right now. Why do people suffer? Many of the explanations that we've given, he says, explain why people get judged and why people get treated in their life the way they do. You can still find in the world tzaddikim gemurim, and yet they still suffer. And you can't use any of the explanations that he has already used for why they might be suffering. And then there are people who are terrible, Shioshvim Shaanan Vesheket Po'olam, and they get to enjoy their life. Why is that? V'elu en tochachotav shel Iyov, shebao yisurav shelal chet klal kafidato. This is what the book of Iyov is about. Iyov suffered, And he had no idea why. And his three friends come and they try to give him explanation after explanation. And most of them are basically, you sinned, or you don't know that you sinned, or you made a mistake here and you didn't know, or your kids, or whatever. And Eov just rebuts them all and says, no, I am perfect. That's what he basically says. He says, I don't buy any of these explanations. I didn't do anything to deserve what happened to me. Satan couldn't even find anything. And if we try to find in Eov, if we try to give, what's our parish on Eov going to be? Is our parish on Eov going to be, oh, it's because of his kids, or oh, it's because he had a lack of emunah? Anything we try to find in Eov, what are we doing? Eov will nevertheless ask the question. It's not impossible to imagine a tzaddik gamor who gets punished in this world, who gets suffering in this world, and we have to wonder why that happens. We don't have an answer. The truth is, only God knows. Moshe Rabbeinu asked God, can I see what happens to the people who follow the Torah? And then he saw that some people were suffering, and Moshe Rabbeinu asked why. And what was Hashem's response? Shut up. Exactly. It said, Shtok kach ala lefanai. This is what I decided, which is just a non-response. But it is God's response. So how do we understand that? We skip to the second next paragraph. He says, Afa pike. Im ha'alam azu yesh betana azot sod nimsar le'anshei ha'torah v'ha'kabbalah. Says, there is a secret. It was given over to people who know secrets and who know the Kabbalah, which literally just means received. This is, the Ramban is living in a time before Kabbalah gets its name, right? There's no Kabbalah center in the 11th century Spain or 12th century Spain. Kabbalah just meant literally just received secret tradition. Sod ha'ibur. He uses this phrase a lot. Sod ha'ibur. It's not exactly clear what he means because he never tells you what it means. But from context, you can start to figure it out, and I'll show you how. Who remembers the story of Eov? Who talks to Eov? Anybody remember the names of the people? I was hoping some of you would because I don't remember all of them. Let me remember. So there's Tzohar. Tzohar. I can't remember. Somebody look it up.
Hey Google.
There is.
Book of Job.
There is.
Information about Book of Job.
Yeah, they're friends. The three friends. Their names are.
Job's friends.
Something with a tzaddik, and a pei. Something with an aleph and a hey. And I. And build and something with a bet and a dalet.
Okay, Google. Who are the three friends in the Book of Job?
Let's see what you get.
Alexa. Eliphaz.
Bildad.
Hashuai. The Shuhite. And Sofar.
I got it right. Sofar, Eliphaz, and Bildad. Okay? So they're the three who were talking to him the whole book. But then all of a sudden, in like the last 10 chapters, all of a sudden a new guy shows up named Elihu. Who comes out of nowhere. Right? And he says stuff to Eov, and Eov does not respond. And it's not clear what's going on. Because when you look at what Elihu says, it's not clear what he said that was so different from what everybody else said, but it seems like Eov accepts his tainus. But then right afterwards, anyways, God comes and yells at Eov till the end of the book. What did Elihu say? So the Ramban says, I know what Elihu said. Elihu talked about Soda Ibor. We know that whatever it is that Eliyahu said had to respond to Eov, even though Eov had no sins. So what did he say? He got angry. So what does he say? V'zeh tema gadol. B'amet tiken Eliyahu ha-she'ilah gadol hazot. What did Eliyahu say that convinced Eov? She'u tzadik v'ralo o rasha v'tovlo. Chutz mishtei deot halalo ein etzlenu midash lishit she'tachriya b'malchokat hazu b'shum panim. We don't know what he said. So he says in the end, on the next page, he says, "Avul misodo tatora shenelmu levad min hazochim mehem kabbalah." He keeps playing coy, the Ramban. He keeps saying, "It's a sod, it's a secret. I can't tell you about it."
But he knows a secret?
But he continues, by the way, he does. He continues, by the way, and he says, "I, and you'll tell me, if we don't know the reason, then why are we even asking the question? If we can't ever," this is just as an aside, but he points out, he says, "If we say, if we're going to throw up our hands and say, we don't understand why people suffer, then why ask the question at all? Why bother saying people suffer because they do this sin or they do that sin or because their parents did this or because their kids did that or because they're suffering for the nation or because whatever? Why bother?" He says, "Because it's a mitzvah to do that. It's a mitzvah to try to come up with a rationale to understand why God does things." No, we shouldn't be perverse about it, right? But for our own sake, we should try our best. Now, what is the secret? So the answer is almost... say with pretty good certainty, because I've seen what Dr. Chavel, who is an expert on the Ramban, you know, the blue Ramban, the blue set, the classic set with the footnotes on the bottom, that's Dr. Chavel. So he read all of the Kitvei Ramban and he wrote all about it, and he says the answer is, what is the sod? It is Gilgul. So in a nutshell, the answer for the Ramban is that when you don't know, when all else fails and you don't know why a person is suffering, the answer is because of something they did in a previous life. Now, it's easy. It's an easy answer, but that's what the Ramban says is. And what did Eliyahu tell Eov? That's what he told him. He told him, you're suffering not for anything you did in this life, but because of something you did in the previous life. That's what Eliyahu told him. That's what the Ramban says. Now, how do I know that's what the Ramban says? Because the Ramban goes over and over many times about the sod, the sod, the sod. And in one place, he kind of tips his hand. Where does he tip his hand? I have it at the bottom of the page. When we talk about Yibum, when we talk about Yibum, and the concept shows up by Yehuda and Tamar, right? The concept of Yibum where Yehuda's first two sons died and he was supposed to pass her off to Shelah, and she didn't, and then she marries Yehuda, and Zerach and Peretz are supposed to be basically Al Shem, Erva Onan. And the Ramban explains this idea, and basically what he's saying is that they are Gilgulim of Aaron Onan. And he uses the word sod, and he talks about Ibor over there. That is the sod, it would seem, according to the Ramban. The sod is Gilgul. And for the Ramban, this is a fundamental concept, because it goes to the heart of Tzadik V'Ra'lo and Rasha V'Tovva. It's so central, and it finds its way even into Halakha, the concept of Yibum, the concept of when a brother dies and has no children, and basically has no Hemsheikh, so the other brother comes in, and has a child with the wife, and creates a hamsheikh of that brother. That's the idea. For sure, in a Kabbalistic sense. So Ramban sees Gilgul as a very, very fundamental idea in Jewish philosophy in general. Do we have to believe in Gilgul?
Could I ask a question before you get to that? How many Gilgulim will one neshama go through?
Good. That's mechanics. I want to get to it soon.
Okay.
Before we get there, though, just do we have to believe in Gilgul? So it's very interesting. There's a sefer called Aseh Lecha Rav. This is by Rav Chaim David Alevi, a former chief rabbi of Tel Aviv. And he has a piece here. It's a set of tshuvos. So somebody wrote him saying, I saw that in a different tshuva you talked about Gilgulim, and I was very surprised that you talked about Gilgulim, because the Rambam doesn't talk about Gilgulim, so he doesn't believe or whatever. So Rav Chaim David Alevi says, Chas v'shalom, Gilgul is a fundamental concept of Judaism. And the only reason the Rambam doesn't talk about it is because it was so fundamental that there was no reason to talk about
it's
it.
It's obvious.
We'll talk about it.
Gotta love it.
The Rambam refers to it as a soul which is not supposed to reveal. So.
Yeah, that's a good point. In other words, if it was so fundamental, then why didn't he just talk about it?
It isn't fundamental. He's saying it's not fundamental. He's saying it's a soul which Kabbalists understand and.
That's a great point.
And he doesn't even spell it out, so clearly it's not a fundamental thing that the average layman needs to...
Right. So if Chaim David Levy thinks it is, he says, because it's Friday, and the Zohar, and there's a whole Shara Gilgulim in the Zohar, so that, the whole mystical tradition relies on this concept. So from their perspective, it is fundamental. It's as fundamental as the Zohar is.
The Zohar talks about it?
For sure. There's a Shara Gilgulim, yeah.
Oh,
Moshe Rabbeinu is a Gilgul. Moshe Rabbeinu is a Gilgul of Hevel. And Korach was a Gilgul of Kayin. So instead of Hevel being
that's
swallowed up, Korach... What? Yeah, it's in Zohar, yeah. Arizal, I don't remember.
Well,
it's actually
that's
in Zohar.
Different.
They are, but I don't remember. There are Gilgulim in the Zohar, yes.
Isn't the original... Isn't
Yes, what's attributed to Rav Chaya?
I mean, there's no direct. I mean, I say there's no, but I've never heard any direct reference in the Torah of any spirits or.
No. There's no direct. Obviously, there's no direct reference to Gilgul in the Torah.
No, I'm sorry. It's even Saul. I mean, there's people.
Vayipach ba'apav nishmat chayim. I mean, that's the neshama.
What if he
you could,
life?
You could.
That doesn't is necessarily termed as a different.
You could.
A physical and a spiritual self.
Down one nefesh. Okay, I'm seder.
Wait, that's what that guy. What was his name? The guy.
Well, no, he's talking about
the guy that Navo. Anav.
Alon Anava said that he had a near-death experience. He talks about it a lot.
Yeah,
fascinating person.
He's adamant.
Yeah,
he
said he saw it.
The soul has a purpose.
He had a near-death experience. He came back. He was a Chiloni person who actually grew up in Ranana. And he was in New York, and he OD'd. And he was clinically dead for 10 minutes or something like that, I don't remember. And he had this whole experience of flying through the air and seeing...
It's famous, I'm not sure.
Yeah, you can see it on YouTube. He has descriptions. He has like 3-hour discussions with people.
And now he's Haredi.
And now he's Haredi, and he has a kollel learning Kabbalah. And a very, very interesting person.
There's a belief that you say the soul has a certain purpose, and until it reaches it, it keeps going back. That's the
good. So hold on. So first of all, do we have to believe in it? So Rav Chaim Dovid Levi says, yeah, you have to believe in it. Pashtus and the Rambam, no, you don't have to believe it at all. Many Rishonim didn't believe in it explicitly, aside from the Rambam not mentioning it. There are those that just didn't say it. It's definitely not one of the Yud Gimel Ikarim. So I'd say it's on that level from my perspective. Right, the strong, you know, the mystical tradition relies on it, for sure. One interesting disproof to it, I put on the sheet. I just saw it tonight. The Rashash quotes this Gemara. This is very interesting. The Gemara in Bava Metzia, right? So I put this under the heading, but don't we get a clean slate? The Gemara says, Baruch Ata Basadeh, the pasuk, Baruch Ata Basadeh, Baruch Ata Bavecha, Baruch Ata Beitzesach. The Gemara says. Baruch Ata Basadeh Shehei Nechasecha Meshulashin Shlish Betfuah Shlish Bezeitim Shlish Begfanim. This advice about how to diversify your portfolio, your agricultural portfolio. And then it says Baruch Ata Bavoecha Baruch Ata Bezeitecha Shetehe Yitziatcha Min Haolam Kebiatcha Leolam Ma Biatcha Leolam Belo Chet Af Yitziatcha Min Haolam Belo Chet. Just like you came into this world without sin, you should go out of this world without sin. So the Rashash makes an interesting comment. He says Mikan Stira Ktsat Leva'alei dat Gilgul. This seems to be slight contradiction to those who believe in Gilgul, because the Gemara says you come into this world without sin, and you leave with you should come into this world without sin, and you should leave the world without sin. But if you are Gilgul, then you don't come into the world without sin. What does that mean? Every person comes in with his baggage.
The beginning of the first Gilgul is without sin.
But that was, you know, hard to imagine that that's what we're talking about. It's a pasuk. It's not. It's
even better. It's more close. It's more.
But it seems like it would be talking to me. I assume that if I'm a Gil, that if I am born in 2008 in 1983, I'm not the first of my. I'm not the first copy. Assume that is what Kabbalah assumes. Anyways, Kabbalah classically assumes that there are, at the very least, we're 600,000 neshamot.
Okay.
Right.
But we're 12, 13 million people.
Good. So it gets split. We're going to get to that's mechanics. That's okay. Mechanics. We'll get back to that. But it definitely means that I'm not an original, right? Whether it's 10 or whether it's 600,000, but I'm definitely not an original. And most 600,000 souls.
What when it talks about Gilgul, does it split a person up into some sort of way that the neshama isn't necessarily the person?
Neshama is the person. Yeah, let's hold on one second. Hold on. I just want to get through this one last part, and then we're going to get to the mechanics. I can see that's very, very interesting, and I was actually researching it tonight to get some more clarity. So, but first, I want to touch on this. What do we do about this Gemara? In other words, what do the Baalei Gilgulim do about this? So, Rav Chaim Kanievsky is quoted the following. He says, "Mistabra shelo Rashash katav zot." Can't be that the Rashash wrote this. Couldn't be. Kevan. Somebody read this along with me, please. Sharei, af im ze gilgul, chi zechet, afshar litvakeach im harashash tamid kedarka shel Torah, avol shtuyot ein bedvarav. Okay, so the second half of the sentence says, we can argue with the Rashash if he says something, but if he says stupid things, shtuyot, I'm not even going to argue, it's just not the Rashash. Now, why does he think it's not the Rashash? I can't understand this sentence. Cave, I thought he was saying something very, very clever. I'm sure he is. I just don't understand what he's saying. Sharei. Af im ze gilgul v'chi ze chet. Even if you say it's a gilgul, is this a sin? I don't know what that means. I have no idea what he's trying to say. What is he saying?
Wait, are you saying that's a question? Maybe it's a statement. Af im ze gilgul v'chi ze chet.
I think it's a rhetorical question.
As in, even Gilgul, the Gilgul, every Gilgul is still coming in with a clean slate, is what you're saying.
I don't know. I can't understand the sentence.
That's what the word says.
Which is classic, but I can't. I don't know.
Even as a Gilgul, you come in with a clean slate. Well, that's it. With no sin.
But he said if you're a Gilgul, then you have to have sin.
The Ramban, but then it's a problem with the Ramban.
But then.
No, the whole point
is. The Rashash's point is how can you become as. The theory of Gilgul is that you're coming in because you've still got work to do. So it must be that you have a chait. I think.
It's not a chait. It's a different.
Maybe it's not a chait, you're saying?
It's not a chait.
Maybe you've got a job to do, but you don't have a chait.
No, but from the Ramban, who's explaining Eov as being basically, he's alluding to Eov as being the punishment from a former life.
Right.
Unless that's not the sod, which Rav Chaim doesn't think that's what the sod the Rambam was talking about.
No, it's not.
I don't know.
Isn't that what we said at the beginning?
What?
That because he says that the pasuk says that you come into the world without a chet and you leave the world without a chet.
Right. It sounds like everybody comes into the world without.
So a chet. Then he says, "Is this a stira against?"
Yeah, that's what the Rashi says.
What does it mean?
Then he says, "Stupid! It can't be that because." Gilgul is the basis of Gilgul is the fact that you only come back the Gilgul only return if you have chet.
So then that so makes then, it worse. That makes the Gemara worse. Because then the Gemara is saying.
Maybe he's not talking about this. If he's talking about the soul, then it's the initial soul rather than the.
Reincarnation
of the soul.
But it sounds like the Gemara is assuming that every single person comes into the world without chet. So pasuk is not talking about some people. It's talking about all people. What?
What is leaving without chet?
Means just like you came in with a clean slate, try to leave with a clean slate.
But try to leave with
Baruchah, it's a bracha, you should do that. So there are other answers to the Rashash. So take a look, I put some of the answers on the sheet. It says, Hapri Shlomo katav she'en kan shum stira. She'en kavanat the gemara la bracha la guf, harayu bevade ba le'olam b'lo chet. The guf came into the world without a chet. Ve'im kavanat the gemara ala neshama, haray bi'ata rishona le'olam ha'ita b'lo chet. So this, I guess, is kind of like what you guys were saying. So we could read the Gemara in one of two ways. Either the Gemara is talking about the goof. The goof came in with no chet. That's true. The goof, we assume, is a new goof. And that's a legitimate way to read the Gemara. In other words, this body came in without a chet. The neshama didn't, but the body came in without a chet. It's just like you came in with a new, pristine body with no chet. You should leave the body without chet. Seder. Right. Leave that alone. Then he quotes this Hadar Yaakov, who quotes the Divrei Yoel. That's, I believe, that's the Sad Merebi. And the Ramban says, So he suggests that this is according to the Ramban who said, and this is only in a case where, and this might be what you guys are alluding to, where there really is no chet. In other words, these psukim are talking about in a future world where people really don't sin. But it's not talking about our world. Okay, fine. Another way of reading the Gemara. And then the final is the Shem Yishmuel. He says, "Ha'averot mitkaprot kodem yiridat haneshamot beGilgul." This is a new idea. Mm-hmm. This makes things a little bit more confusing. Because basically, you get kapara. What happens really in between? Even the Rabban will agree with this: that after you die, you go to another place, right? Your neshama goes to another place, and then at some point, your neshama will come down. I'm just, you know, illustrating. But in between, something happens to your neshama.
So that's like a henim?
Right. So the Shem Yishmuel will say, at that point you get laundered, right? You get ringed out, and then when you come back down, so then you're clean. Why do you come back? Say it as a question. Yes, it does. It does. It would contradict the Sharak Mul. It would. It would contradict the Ramban's point about you needing to do more kapara.
So why does he assuming you get punished? You know, Eve was punished for a previous life.
Yes.
If you've already been laundered.
Correct. You're absolutely right. The Shem Shuo cannot work in the framework of the Ramban as it's understood.
Is there any other explanation of reading the Ramban?
Not that I know of.
So you get punished in this world.
No, because the Ramban is explicit. The Ramban isn't.
He's not. But if you were to read,
it's not explicit exactly what the Soda says.
I've seen at least two annotated versions of the Ramban, both from Dr. Chevelle and another person who lives in Detroit, who both say the exact same thing, and they both bring pretty ironclad proofs that this is what the Ramban means, based on his language, the references that he makes, and the other places where he uses the term Soda Ibor.
Can chet and punishment be separated?
What do you mean?
Let's say if you are clean of chet,
right?
But let's say if you didn't believe in this Gilgul concept, and the Shama has to go to a higher level, then let's say people talk about the fact that people have different potential. The Shama has a different potential. So if you've gone through a level, maybe your potential is higher, and therefore doing smaller things have a greater impact on the punishment. So although you don't have a chet, and your slate is wiped clean, but your Shama is at the higher potential level. And if any small change in something you do, you have a greater impact on your punishment in this world. So maybe that's what you can look at it.
That's the case, then you don't need to go on to the
fact. I believe that.
But I'm saying if something like that, you don't have to say that Eeyore was a Gilgul, you can just say that was necessary in order to bring him up to an individual at a high level. You don't need to get into Gilgul, but you don't have to blame an Eeyore for being a Gilgul. We'll just say we needed to give, even though he didn't have any sins, his level needs to be raised.
David, are you just expressing the idea that if a person, when a person's spiritual, forget Gilgul for a second, like you all say, when a person's spiritual stature rises because of the mitzvah that he does or because of the good deeds that he does, so then when he does a chait, even if it's smaller, he'll be punished harsher than if he had done it before. That's a standard concept. You don't need Gilgul for that. That's HaKadosh Baruch Hu medakte kechuta sa'ara. He treats tzaddikim
exactly
like with a hair's breath. Hair's.
Yeah, that's how it's using that concept. So if you were born into a place whereby you didn't have any mitzvah around you, you're treated with a slightly more leniency if you do things wrong. So maybe that's the concept of Gilgul. When Neshama comes back, the punishment may be harsher. That's what Tzadikim
meaning means. you might have started on a higher level, and therefore you have that Chut HaSara right away.
Yeah, and that could make sense with cleaning. There's no Chet. You've not actually got a Chet, but you just got a higher potential.
Maybe. Now, the last section that I wanted to do is something I was just looking at tonight, which I titled, Wait, Which Body? So now, as I said before, everybody agrees that there's going to be one reincarnation at the end. That everybody agrees with. We're going to come back into the body. So then the question becomes, if you don't believe in Gilgulim in general, like the rolling Gilgulim, then Akol Tov V'Yafeh, whose body do you come back to? There's only one body to talk about. Right? Yaakov's going to come back to Yaakov's body, Yitzchak's going to come back to his body, Moshe Rabbeinu is going to come back to his body, everybody's going to go back to their own body. But if you believe in Gilgulim, then wait a second. Souls have been through dozens of bodies. So when they eventually come back, Be'ezrat Hashem, which body do they come back in?
Mixture, good question.
And then the other question that gets created, it's the same question really, which is if we believe that there's 600, there's 10 or there's 600,000 souls, then the question becomes, well, who am I? Who am I? What's my identity? How many come back? So now there's two options here from the Kabbalistic perspective. So you take a look. I printed it out. This is from an internet question, right? Hidabrut. I found it on tons of websites, and Chabad had their own take. But this put together the things nicely. It says, B'sefer Arvei Nachal, Katav Deguf Achron Levad Sheishlim Chuko Hu Omed L'tchilat HaMitim. Arvei Nachal says, the winner is the last body. Okay, Seder. Gufim Arishonim Nevdu. They stay in the ground. V'kol mitzvot shasu gufot Arishonim. Yoresh zeh gufa acharon. He is the ultimate inheritor of everything. In other words, the neshama traveled from guf to guf to guf. The last one is the winner. It's a musical chairs, and the last one standing gets to be the body that comes back. and he has one identity, okay? That means that no matter how many lives he lived, he has one identity that keeps all of those sins and all of those mitzvot, everything keeps going with him. And it's only the last body that's relevant. Ulam dat maran abet Yosef, a sefer magin b'sharim, the author of the Shulchan Aruch of Yosef Karo, in a sefer magin b'sharim, kol gufot yekum letchia, he says explicitly, all the bodies come back. All of them. Every grave in every cemetery.
So he's talking, is he talking within the, assuming that there is Gubilin?
Yes. Yes.
I never thought this was a realist.
People
really believed this was
going to
happen.
Yeah, absolutely.
Really?
Yes.
Why?
Because that's what our tradition teaches.
Well, everybody's going to come back to life and
well, it's either going to be everybody or a fraction of everybody. 100%. Your kids believe this, David. Your wife believes this. Everybody believes this.
No, why would everybody come back to life? Doesn't make any sense.
Why doesn't it make sense? Because that's the whole purpose of life, is to come back and do mitzvot in this, on Earth.
On Earth?
Yeah.
Really?
That's why God created Earth. That's why he created man.
Yeah, but that's where we lived.
But
surely.
But we're living a deficient life, and we have to come back and live the real life.
What, on Earth, which is
yes.
not deficient?
Well, I don't know if it's going to be Earth. I don't know if it's going to be Earth.
Or
who knows? As you guys pointed out, there are logistical issues with Earth.
Yeah, but that's what doesn't make
it'll
sense.
Be solved. Say it, I'm not worried about that.
What's the other possibility?
I'm always struck by David. I think it's hysterical because Lahavdil, okay? I listen to these podcasts sometimes of these Chiloniim teaching the academics teaching Tanakh. And the way they describe Datiim and the way that we look at Chumash, they describe they're like, you know, Chiloniim always have trouble with Chumash and with the stories in Tanakh because it seems so fanciful. Like, how could these things have happened? Like, how could, the sea have split? And I'm like, Irachinami, I know, it's amazing. It was God. It's a miracle. And they're always amazed, like, how could you believe this happened? Because it's a miracle. And it's, we're like talking different languages. That's sometimes.
Yeah, that's right. And I think that it's difficult. That's why it's a problem. If you're really trying to believe this,
but,
it's a big problem.
But David, and I'm wary of using these kinds of arguments.
What?
Do you have a problem believing in miracles?
Yeah, it's huge.
Okay.
But
that's your problem
I'm wary of using these kinds of arguments. But if 1,000 years ago I came over to you and told you that you know you have little, for want of a better word, bugs crawling all over your body. And every time you touch somebody, you transfer those bugs over to them, and they transfer it to you. And that's why sometimes you get sick and they get sick. You know what you'd call me? You'd call me crazy.
Agreed.
Because germ theory didn't exist. And that sounds like miracle. That sounds like crazy thing.
Yeah.
Now, we know of it as science. And I'm not saying that it's science that's going to bring everybody back, although who knows?
No. And what I'm saying is, I agree with exactly what you're saying. To try and transfer it into a literal understanding terms today doesn't make any sense. To say what our bones are going to come back.
I don't know what you mean by it doesn't make any sense. Does it make sense that God split the sea? Does it make sense that that water turned to dam? Does it make sense that, pick a miracle? What do you mean it doesn't make sense? That Moshe Rabbeinu stuck his hand into his shirt, came out with tzara'at, with leprosy, and then stuck it back in, and then it disappeared. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but there are certain things that we have to believe that have happened, and certain things that we have to believe that these are things that we learn from. I mean, we don't necessarily. I mean, this is our. What's literal and what's not, and maybe there are lots of things that aren't necessarily literal that we just have to learn things from.
I don't know of any Orthodox tradition that doesn't take this literally.
This.
The final reincarnation, the idea that people are going to come back in their bodies.
Well,
I don't know.
I can't believe.
The Rambam definitely.
You're going to come back. The bones are going to come back to life. Surely not.
Well, he does. He said he did.
Oh, he said he wants.
And it's completely irrational.
It's not irrational. What, because it's miraculous?
No, because it's not.
By
it's
definition,
beyond,
miracles are irrational.
Science.
Yes.
Yeah, but it's beyond science.
So it's
beyond
miracles.
Science. Yes.
Yeah, but the whole point, let me say that the Rambam says that all the things that happen are built into nature.
So
this is part of nature.
So
we're just not aware of yet.
It's built into nature that there's like there's a ticking time clock. That, you know, in the year 7,420,
okay,
at 6:30 p.m. suddenly.
What I'm saying is we can't believe in that sense that we're all going to be the same body that we have now. I mean,
you can believe as you, or well, the mechanics you want, you can believe whatever you want to believe.
Right.
It will happen to your accepted belief of going to work to some extent. Something. I don't know what it was. I'm with you. I don't understand how, but
if it's a conceptual metaphor that we're all
no, that's why he wrote a letter. He wrote a whole letter defending himself, saying no, I
no,
believe
that all the Jewish people were at Mount Har Sinai. I mean, we weren't up there, but we like conceptually there. Those types of things make sense if we're going to.
There's no way you can read that into what Chazal are saying. And that's not what the Navi says. I mean, the Navi in Yecheskel has people coming, bones, dry bones coming back to life. Yecheskel did it on a small scale. Now, so we have here two options. Either, if you believe in Gilgulim, either everybody's coming back, or just one body.
What about bad people? Are they coming back as well?
That's a great question. Probably not. We can get back to that.
So that helps our logistical problem.
why would that
make sense? I think that they're the people who have to specifically work on their...
No, this is for after they've worked on it. Nobody comes back. When we talk about the final Tchiyat HaMetim, that's already after everybody's worked all their stuff out.
It's everybody's pure.
There's not going to be punishment in this world for those people that come back. That's already after everybody's finished. And I believe there are Gemaras that imply that not everybody comes back and that some people are not zochah to come back. I believe.
Isn't the whole thing that this world is not perfect, is imperfect?
It is.
What's the end of days back in this world again? I mean,
In a more perfect world.
Not here, then.
I can't say.
You can't say.
In a world more similar to the one that Adam and Chava were born into,
right,
whether that was our world or a different world, I don't know.
Right, so
I can't say.
Right, so again, so the same thing with bones and bodies. I mean, it's not. We don't know what that means.
No, we don't know what it means.
We don't know what it means.
I can give you the sci-fi version. Right, the sci-fi version is that we take the DNA of every single bone and then we clone everybody, and that's how they come back, and God implants in them the souls. We could go that way.
And we have a moon colony while we're at it.
Wait, what?
And there'll be a hyperloop, so it'll take, so to go
split
up.
Split second.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. That's, theoretically what happens, but I can't say. Now, the last, hold on. So he said, Vazbel, Ezehu, Kamosh, Katav, Besefer, Debre, Yol, Shan, Shama, Mitchaleket, Lakamani, Tzotzot. This is a fundamental idea also, in terms of Gilgulim, that if there are only 600,000 souls, the Nesiva Solomon writes about this, but there were 3 million people, right? Because there were women and then there were children. So the answer to that is that even when there were 600,000 people there were
3 million,
they were actually divided already. So I presume, let's say, if we want to be romantic about it, the husband and wife were actually even the same soul, perhaps. They were just divided. Which is a very nice romantic idea because it implies that there's this attraction, this natural attraction between two people, and perhaps because they're the same soul. Soulmates, almost. Something like that. But either way, now we're far past 3 million, right? We're up to, I believe it's 16 million now or something?
I know, we're like 16 million.
It's 46% in Israel, or 7.
Something like that.
14.
Something like that. So it's all, diluted. We've become diluted into everything, but not diluted, meaning it's strong, each one. What I find fascinating about that, though, by the way, is according to the theory that says, right, that they're all coming back, it's just, like, which one... What does that do to the theory of identity? In other words, if every neshama is its own identity, and then there's two of them, and then three of them, and then four of them, and five of them, and they've all lived different lives and done different things. And also, how does that work? You know, exactly, because I thought the whole idea was that the neshama was supposed to go through a process by going through each body. So if... Now what happens? So I think, if I'm reading them right, basically, what you have is, you have one neshama that's lived through 12 lives, let's say, and then Neto, at the end, 12... That one neshama...
12 lives of himself.
Gets divided into 12 again, and then dumped into each body.
In a sci-fi movie, like if he would meet his former self, potentially the whole entire world would collapse.
Right. So I think of it as akin to a time travel.
Future,
I think that's fascinating. By the way, there's philosophers have a concept called the multiple universe theory. One of the ways that they try to show that they don't need a god, because if there's multiple universes, then all outcomes have happened, right? But the offshoot of that is that there's a universe where I've done everything. There's a universe where I said yes to something and said no to something. There's a universe where I said I did something bad and I did something good. What's fascinating is, what connection now do I have to the person who diverged from me so long ago? Like, are we still in any way the same person? And what does that say about me as a person? If I could do all of those things, am I a good person or am I a bad person? Am I just the luck of the draw? I happen to be the one who lives in Ra'anana, whereas in another universe, there's one who lives in Las Vegas. And
what's
just...
a neshama? Is the neshama the personality and the actual person?
It's supposed to be the core identity. That's how I see it.
Right.
Core identity.
It's actually your core identity. It's not necessarily your personality.
I think it's meant to be something like that.
It's meant to be your actual person.
I mean, what do you mean by personality? Personality is something that also happens when...
Is your reflection, is what you do, I suppose.
I think it's deeper than that. I think it's something more fundamental than just your personality. But I can't say I know what it is. Now, the last thing I just wanted to do is the tzlach. This amazed me because the Noda Behuda was famously pretty anti-mysticism, at least in... the Noda Behuda, Yechezkel Landau. We don't say traditionally. Rabbi Beller didn't like us saying the Hineni Michonu Mezuman, which actually starts with what's it called, the Shem Yichud Kachabrichu. Right. The reason why we don't say the Shem Yichud Kachabrichu is basically Noda Behuda went crazy about it. He lived in the 16th century when it started to become 17th century when it started to become popular. He wrote a tshuva, just saying this is crazy. We shouldn't be saying this at all. And in general, that was his stance. But he has this in his commentary on Brachos. He says, "Hatzadik tzarich lashlim chukol b'torah b'mitzvot. A tzadik needs to finish everything he has to do in Torah and mitzvot. K'shenesaf bizmano, az haschirot hamishlalemet l'nasof magia zman hashilum haschirot." If he finishes his rental, right, of his body at the end of his life, but he didn't finish his job, zoch lirot tzcharo term yamut. So if he finishes his job, so then he will be rewarded in this life. Because he's done everything he needs to do, he'll be rewarded, and then he'll go on to Olam Haba, and he's done. V'nikras lo yom mein Olam Haba. And then what you call that at that point is mein Olam Haba. Aval im meit kodem zmano, v'avon ador, v'hu nikshal b'mikre, v'chet u'meit b'cheto. But if he died, basically in his lifetime, before he was able to do everything he was supposed to do, either because he sinned or because his door sinned, lo kala zman pulato adayin, he's not finished. This is an expression of what, I was happy to see this, because this is an actual concrete explanation of this whole theory given by a rationalist, frankly. It is Pirush and Shas, right? This is not in some far-fetched sefer. Aval guf ani rakav bakever zelo yashuv lihilav valerod. Oh, David. It says, the body sitting in the ground, which is decomposing, is not going to come back. So it goes to another body. He disagrees with the Maran Beit Yosef. It's not going to get split up into all the bodies. Only one body comes back, and that is the last body he was in. So in other words, what happens? the tzaddik who finished his job in his lifetime and then died, he will come back in his original body.
Which means the original, the first...
The body, the only body, his only body.
The last body.
The only body, which was his first and last body. אבל אם לא ישלים חוקו וצריך להתגלגלות, אז אף שיקום בתחילת המתים לא ישוב לאפר הראשון, כי מאפר חדש גוף אחר. So that's what he says, אדם יסודו מאפר, even though he starts from afar, but he's not going to go back to that afar. He's going to go to a new body at the end. I just thought it was like, I was so happy to find it. It was just a very, very detailed exposition of the whole thing in non-Kabbalistic terminology, frankly, at all. There's no Kabbalah in here.
Does he tell us where he gets this from? Where does he derive
it? It's based on the Gemara in Brachos. There's a famous Gemara in Brachos, which I put on the sheet, which talks about why people suffer. Right, the Gemara asks tzaddik v'ralo, rasha v'tovlo, and one of the answers the Gemara says is a tzaddik who suffers is a tzaddik ben rasha, and a tzaddik who doesn't suffer is a tzaddik ben tzaddik. Now, on the face of it, what the Gemara means is that if you come from somebody, your ancestors were tzaddikim and you're a tzaddik, then there's no reason for you to suffer. But if you are a tzaddik but your ancestors were not tzaddikim, you have to suffer a little bit for that. The Gra says no, that's not what it means. Tzaddik ben tzaddik means in a previous Gilgul, you were a tzaddik. And a tzaddik ben rasha means that in a previous Gilgul, you were a rasha. And that's why you're paying for it. I believe it's on that. Is it good? No, it's not that Gemara. But it's a different Gemara that is in the same area in Shas. Anyways, that's the sugya. You guys want to continue talking about Olam Haba? Because we got much more.
Yeah.
Yes or no, Jake? You hate it. All right.
I don't believe in it, but I find it's very, very fascinating.
There's also to talk about...
The truth is, I don't know what to believe.
No, the problem with this topic is that it's not lamaism. In other words, it's not, you're not going to change your life.
There's so many subjects that we can talk about.
What?
If we're missing subjects that are more...
There's nothing you're going to do with this information. It's fascinating.
It's curious.
Yes.
Yeah, it's amazing.
There's so many other things that I think are...
I'm going to be finding a definitive answer.
It's not going to change your life.
This is reminiscent of many of the Gemara arguments that I can't do anything with. I think that some of the things I would like to do something and be impacted with my week.
Right.
So that's maybe I'm in the wrong chair, though.
Right. But no, I understand.
Tax evasion, sex. Dealing with.
Right.
Donations. It's a thousand subjects.
So I think we're going to stay with the more philosophical topics.
No problem.
But the philosophical, philosophical topics that, like, we can get our hands around.
Great.
I hear that.
We're very far.
No, this is very far, and I agree with you that almost none of these things, are going to change the way I live my life day to day.
I agree with you.
I enjoy talking about them because I think they're interesting, and I like seeing the scope. And it's imaginative. It's interesting, and that I have an
idea. It inspires a lot of discussion.
I agree with you that it's not going to change our lives. I have another idea, which is to talk about midrash and to talk about parshanut and how we read the Torah and how we have traditionally read the Torah and why we read the Torah that way. It's not going to be like, you know,
no, but this is
what should I do with my taxes? It's not going to be that. I don't want to talk about what we're going to do with that.
Talking about Mashiach and the world to come. And it's like almost like a fundamental belief with Judaism.
Thank you very much.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
We're talking about what is the neshama, what are all these things that are almost like accepted in the day to day when we talk about Judaism and it talks about the neshama.
We didn't do the source of this is why we, this is where it isn't. This is why it has a presence in our history. This is why it has.
You mean where is it in the Torah?
Why would
we could do
we
that?
We just stopped. We started from.
We started in the middle. We did. That's
and
fair.
I don't. Maybe if we had the first. It's a fundamental, and you should be in it. Like, oh, I never thought of the whole section.
That's fair.
Now we're in this. I don't. We're in a corner already.
That's fair.
Maybe
that's
we should start going to be in it. What is the neshama?
What is the neshama? That's fair. That's fair.
That's a fair point. I've got a clue. I don't really formulate my opinion.
Then that doesn't satisfy your objection about it.
I mean, maybe
it's not something that's going to affect the way I live my life.
Maybe the practicalities that would be I have to change things more practically in my day to day because it's something that's so fundamental. But
right.
I'm dealing with family raising, community building,
right.
Earning a living. Should we earn a living? What's the or should I do the minimum?
We talked about that.
I know. I'm saying that was something. What is the perspective on work?
Right.
That was very.
But this, all these topics of how do you relate to God, spiritual.
This is the first step. Maybe this is the perfect second step, but without the first step, the whole thing seems like it's irrelevant.
I hear you.
Okay.
I hear you.
And maybe we should. If you think that we're going
to. If David could come in and just say in the middle, wait, maybe there's no Tzkat HaMetim, then I missed something, and I skipped something. You're right. There's no tzkat, or that there's no neshama, or that there's no whatever. Yeah, you're right. I skipped something. I hear that. Okay, let me think about that.
I think it's a fascinating subject because it's important to have an opinion on.
I think it's fascinating too, but I can definitely understand where Jake is coming from in terms of it's not going to do anything.
I can just waste my time on YouTube all the time.
And now you say we're going to go all night.
But I find.